Hey, it's time for Truth About Markets again with Max and Stacy here in London. So we got some watery chickens, huh?
Oh, yeah. This week has been the week of the autumn statement from the Chancellor of the Exchequer, and he's talking about how great the economy is doing, despite the fact that our savings rate has declined at the fastest rate in 40 years, and median income is down £5,000 for middle income households. This today in The Guardian, supermarkets selling chicken that is nearly one fifth water. So it goes, frozen chicken breasts on sale in leading supermarkets are being pumped with water and additives that make up nearly 20% of the meat, to the point where consumers are paying about 65p a kilo for water, The Guardian can reveal. The legality of the industrial process in which cheap imported chicken is tumbled in a cement mixer-like machine has also been called into question, but the products are available in discount ranges sold in high street retailers. So here we have this false notion that you're saving money by shopping at Asda, Aldi, and Iceland are all selling this Brazilian chicken tumbled this way. Now, The Guardian looks at the actual formal guidance to the industry from the Food Standards Agency, and it states that it is illegal in the EU to reprocess frozen chicken preparations unless they are cooked and being made into composite products. But when they asked Aldi and Asda and Iceland, they said, no, we're doing it legally. But there's a question about that. But you're actually paying a lot of money for some very posh water there.
Yes, like fracking. They're fracking the chickens. They're injecting them with water and other substances in an attempt to extend the profits of the chicken tumblers. And I think that this is really unfortunate because these poor chickens. Well, I talked to Plucky about this last night. And he's in a state of shock because his entire industry, after he's been plucked the way he's been plucked, to see this type of thing continue and get worse and worse, it's a tragedy.
Well, it's also the false economy of these sort of savings of this processed food, where it actually costs you so much in not only your health, but actually, you're paying a whole lot more for the actual per nutrient per mineral that you require at many of these Asda-like places. And you see this across the US. Many Americans eat only processed food or stuff from Burger King, where everything is, similarly mixed in a giant cement-like mixer. But there aren't very many nutrients that your body craves. That's why you get the hunger signal sent to you, is that your body needs certain amount of micronutrients, nutrients, vitamins, and it will keep on craving food until you give it to it, your body, to survive. So, of course, if your food has none of these nutrients in it because it's been either removed in the growing process, like American corn, which has almost zero nutrients in it, zero protein, like corn used to have, maize used to have a lot of protein. Now it's been removed in order to have productivity growth and the amount of corn grown per hectare. So here we have this situation where I'd like to know, in terms of nutrient per nutrient, like equal nutrient levels, like how much more poor people are actually paying.
Right. So it's in like the horse meat story that was put into the lasagna here in the UK. It's another sign of hidden inflation because the you're paying for we think you're paying for chicken, you're getting water. It's a substitution and the then you think you're paying. And this is running throughout the entire food chain where substitutions like this are going on. Packaging is getting smaller. And if you were to do a real look at how prices are going up for food and energy, as we've been saying on our show, it's not 2.8% or 2.9% like the government says. Inflation's running closer to 9%. So 9% inflation, and within wages going up to less than 1%, that means that your purchasing power is dropping by 8% a year, Now, if you use the rule of 72, which is you take that interest rate or percentage rate and divide it into 72, you can come up with the solution for what is the doubling effect. So that means that you are going to be bankrupt in, let's see, 8 goes to 9 and 72, and then 7 years. In 7 years' time, your purchasing power of your pound will have dropped by 99%.
Well, so here you have the false economy of cheap food, and it's actually not so cheap when you look at it. Now, the other thing that's happened this past week is that your Prime Minister, David Cameron, was in China, where he has returned with a huge deal for pig semen to be exported to China. It's a 45 million pound deal. And I'm sure sending the entourage there to China probably costs nearly that much. But we're also told, we remember George Osborne recently returned from China, and he said that we have to behave more like the Chinese. We have to act more like China if we want to grow. If we want to have an industrial base again, we need to be like China. Well, this is the true cost of being like China. Shanghai orders cars off roads as pollution exceeds scale. Shanghai ordered vehicles off the roads and factories to cut production after pollution reached hazardous levels, as Hong Kong announced plans to introduce an air quality index that assesses risks from smog. A heavy fog shrouding Shanghai caused widespread flight cancellations and sent an air quality index monitored by the U.S. consulate in the city surging past 500 to beyond the index category. Beyond the index category. Now, we talked recently about the Great Smoke, or the Big Smoke, the event back in the 50s that saw over 10,000 people die prematurely here in the UK from the same sort of thing: coal industrialization. We in the West think by sending all our jobs over there that all of that pollution has miraculously disappeared.
Well, I don't think the economy in China is changed in the last 12 months to trigger this doubling, tripling, quadrupling in the air smog. So I think it's just a question now of the ecology collapsing. So they have like colony collapse. So I guess there's going to be a couple hundred million Chinese that are going to die from asphyxiation and like the Black Plague. So this is the pollution in the China has become like the Black Plague. Now, on the other end of it, of course, the pollution will be less because there'll be less people working in the coal mines because they'll be dead. So the ecology hopefully will get a break.
Well, yeah, that colony collapse, that sudden collapse, that just because we can't observe the slow weakening of a system, or the system filling up with too much poisons and then suddenly it collapses. I noticed last week, I don't know if we talked about it on the Truth About Markets here on Resonance 104.4 FM, but there was a herring collapse out in off British Columbia, Canada. One fleet returned with not a single herring. So this is remarkable because this is the bottom of the food chain, and you would think that with like how fast they reproduce, that you would at least be able to find one. They couldn't find a single herring.
Well, yeah, that's right. This is what happens at the tail end of compounding or exponential growth, is you have a parabolic blow off, leading in this case to complete the supply of fish in the world has been eroded over decades, and but people still manage to pull in a few fish, and it kind of limps along, and then suddenly there's no fish. Bee population in the U.S. went through this whole colony collapse, and suddenly there were just simply no bees. The pollution in Shanghai is suddenly went from extremely high to we don't even know how to calculate it anymore. We're swimming in toxicity and poisonous chickens. So you have that mathematical surge at the end of a compounding parabolic curve, which if people will claim they didn't see coming, they didn't know what was going on, and it was all a big shock to them. But it's all quite simple, mathematically speaking. And so, as you point out, you see it in the overfished fishing. You see it now pollution, and you see it elsewhere, everywhere. And it all kind of goes back to the same source, which is that money's just been too cheap for the worst actors in the economy. The people who've doing the worst ecological disasters and speculation have been given free money with no strings attached. And everyone who's working for a living or saving for a living has had their wealth stolen. So this is now resulting in catastrophe.
Okay, I looked up the story about British Columbia, and it's actually not herring, it's sardine. So, but it's really a fascinating piece here. British Columbia sardine fishery collapse leaves, quote, a hole in the marketplace. Repercussions up the food chain to humpback whales. So a $32 million commercial fishery has inexplicably and completely collapsed this year on the British Columbia coast. The Sardine Seine fleet has gone home after failing to catch a single fish. And the commercial disappearance of the small schooling fish is having repercussions all the way up the food chain to the threatened humpback whale. Jim Darling, a Tofino-based whale biologist with the Pacific Wildlife Foundation, said in an interview on Monday that humpbacks typically number in the hundreds near the west coast of Vancouver Island in summer. They were observed only sporadically, however, this year, including by the commercial whale watching industry. Humpbacks are telling us that something has changed, he said. Ocean systems are so complex, it's really hard to know what it means. For 1 year, I don't think there's any reason to be alarmed, but there's certainly reason to be curious. Humpbacks instead were observed further offshore, possibly feeding on alternative food sources such as herring, sand lance, anchovies, or krill, but not in the numbers observed near shore in recent years.
Yeah. Well, that's right. So the integrated nature of the food chain, if you take away the sardines, everything up the food chain is affected, and potentially we're saying that life, you know, what happens is also, you know, in these oceans is that what happens is the squid population skyrockets. So at some point, there's not going to be nothing left but squid. So hope you all like calamari.
Yeah, we saw that Jacques Cousteau's son or grandson, he had this documentary series he did where he went down off Baja California, off the, Mexico, off the Mexican coast. And it was pretty frightening. There were so many octopus and squid and things in there, you know, and with like teeth, vicious ones. Mm-hmm. And they were talking about some fishermen have been like eaten by them, pulled over and killed by them because there were so many, like one on its own or a few on their own aren't dangerous. But when there's like hundreds in the water, they're suddenly attacking everybody.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, the economy is not meritocratic or Darwinian. It's not survival of the fittest. It's survival of the fattest or survival of the stupidest, or it's become an idiocracy, and all fueled by ultra-cheap money that's awarded to the worst actors in society. So the entire millions of years of evolution has been reversed, and it's no longer Darwinian factors that are at play. It's a cancer. The Federal Reserve and the central banks have fueled cancerous agents in the economy who are practicing the economics of extinction and driving the price up for frozen tuna in lockers in Japan while they fish the remaining tuna to extinction. They are keeping the ivory in their cupboards while they hunt the elephants to extinction. And you can buy Bob Dylan's guitar that he played at for the first time. The electric guitar is worth €1 million as old rock and rollers become extinct. They've been replaced by electronic doppelgangers playing music written by algorithms force-fed through a tube into your alimentary canal to mix in with the frozen chicken bits. So that's all been laid out quite carefully. It's all extinction. So we are a dying race, Stacey. You and I, we're not cyborgs. We're not riddled with additives and drugs. We're the last of the Mohicans.
I wouldn't say we're not riddled with stuff. We're riddled with like the stuff from the 60s, like DDT and stuff like that, that which were in our environment at that time. And actually, this article about the sardine mentions that there was previously a decade-long disappearance of sardines as they had been overfished, but then they returned in 92 up until the point that this year, you know, and then they practiced better fishery habits, like they made sure they didn't overfish them. And they had a quota of 25,000 tons this year, and obviously they failed to catch even a pound of them. So this, they reckon, however, is due to ocean climate and something in the ocean, because they hadn't overfished them. But that's that. But yeah, this is one of the things as well, is so much is happening in the ocean, as scientists have been saying over the past few years, is that it's absorbing a lot of not only the CO2, which is making it more acidic. And remember, everything is just on the margin. It doesn't take that much. You think, well, you know, say it's 10% acidic, or like 1% acidic, and then it becomes 1.1% acidic. You know, we think, ah, that's not much. We as humans wouldn't notice it. But fragile, you know, lower life forms at the bottom of the food chain, they're the ones that start collapsing first, and then the ones right above them starve, and then the ones right above those guys starve. And so, you know, it's a chain reaction.
Yeah, it's a chain reaction. And there's, I think, we're on the verge of some tectonic, you know, they call them the tectonic plates that shift to cause earthquakes. You know, I think the tectonic plates of the global food chain and food pyramid and, you know, I mean, getting back to this China air pollution story in, you know, in Shanghai and elsewhere, it's it seems really, I don't see how this can't result in a pretty short period of time, something very significant. I don't know, you know, Stacey, so you look at those pictures of Shanghai, and they are swimming in pollution, like a cow swimming in formaldehyde as part of an art installation by that local artist dude.
The local artist dude. Okay, well, I'm going to look for, in this article, there's an amazing quote, actually, by this guy this is from Zhang Yanbing, an analyst at Zhisheng Securities in Shanghai, said, quote, "The pollution is worse today, and the fog is getting heavier. But I am not prohibiting my kids from going outside, because we have to learn to grow up in all kinds of environment." But they are definitely wearing face masks. So we're going to evolve, maybe, into these creatures, more like cockroaches will become, that can survive toxic pollutions.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I don't think it's going to be half cyborg and half human, and they're going to be, to deal with the pollution, you know, they'll have some kind of implant into your esophagus or something, or your nostrils, or your whole... your lungs will have to be replaced with some kind of mechanical objects, and you know, it's just not human. I don't know what the post-human cyborg is going to be about, but as I say, I think we're the last real generation that is part of the Homo sapiens. I think we're going to go to Homo nut jobs coming up in the near future. You know. And Japan's good. They've already building a lot of robots in Japan. They've got people losing their jobs in the fast food industry are being replaced by robots. So everyone on strike now in the fast food industry, they're going to be replaced with robots. So you got millions of people unemployed, roaming around, trying to avoid it's a gas attack. I mean, how is this different than, you know, having the state, you know, turn on the gas part of a capital punishment? The people in Shanghai are being executed by their state. What did they do? They what did they do to deserve this?
Well, they're actually, the article does mention that pollution is the leading cause of unrest in China. There are tens of thousands of protests caused by this pollution. There, you know, it's like if you look in Syria, where you talk about gas attack, where we saw a gas attack somewhere in one of these small cities there. Here in National Geographic from last month, November 8th, they write, a Chinese child's lung cancer is linked to pollution. So an 8-year-old girl living near a major road in the Jiangsu province of eastern China has become the youngest person in China and possibly in the world to be diagnosed with lung cancer caused by pollution. The cause of her disease, according to Chinese officials, in last month, the World Health Organization classified air pollution as a major human carcinogen. So there you have it. This little 8-year-old has been given lung cancer due to pollution.
Mm-hmm. Right. So what's gonna revert? The only way to the plague, the Black Plague wiped out half the population of Europe, and in the aftermath, you had the birth of the middle class, because up until then there was no incentive for the lords to pay their serfs. So similarly, it seems like we're going to have a mini extinction.
So the article says that levels of PM2.5, microscopic particles filling the air as a result of pollution, have been shown in some industrialized areas of China to reach levels of up to 40 times higher than the exposure levels considered safe by the World Health Organization. What is PM2.5? Why is it dangerous? And how can it lead to lung cancer? Well, there are lots of carcinogens emitted with industrial pollution. Our respiratory systems filter out the relatively large particles from air pollution, and they're heavy enough to fall from the air quickly. PM2.5 is a measure of among the finest of the particles, fine enough to stay in the air for weeks. The particles are a fraction of the size of the width of a human hair. The tiny ones come nearly entirely from burning things, coal, gasoline, and diesel. Those tiny combustion particles are small enough to penetrate the lungs, and they're made up of all sorts of nasty particles, coal, gasoline, and diesel. Now, there are a lot of shriekers out there who say, we need growth at any cost. We need to burn. We need to burn. We need to burn. We don't want environmentalists in our way. We need to burn. We need to burn. We need to burn, because that's what we need to do. And again, this false economy, this notion that growth at any cost, you know, as if you're not already paying the cost for cleanup, as if you're not already paying the cost for reducing usage. It's there. Your 8-year-old children will drop dead of lung cancer.
Mm-hmm. Well, 200 years ago, during the Enlightenment, during the emergence of the Adam Smith way of looking at the economy, there was no inclusion of the environment. The environment was considered to be infinite, so there was no consideration of air. Air was not considered to be under a limited supply. So now air is a limited supply. So the air is a currency. And the price of air is now reflecting the hyperinflation of the central banks. So central banks are printing money and they're saying there's no inflation. There's no inflation. Well, the price of air is hyperinflating, because the value of everything that requires air is now collapsing due to the fact that air is now hyperinflating in price. The people in Shanghai cannot afford air anymore. They can't afford it. It's beyond their reach. They can't buy air anymore. So that's the connection. There was always this interesting connection between the economy and the ecology, and some, like Herman Daly, you know, and others have written about it, and it's been rejected pretty much by the shriekers and the hyperventilators who don't like to consider themselves part of the planet Earth, you know, and they like to think of themselves as living in a parallel dimension somehow, but there it is.
The article then compares the U.S. to China, and it says we're way better than what they have in China. Their annual average may be as much as 80 to 100 micrograms per cubic meter of air, with Beijing sometimes peaking at 800 to 900. In the United States, a couple of decades ago, in places like Pittsburgh and LA, we had places that averaged in the low 30s. So during their most polluted time in Pittsburgh, it was in the low 30s compared to Beijing, which is up to 900. So the most we get now, even in our most polluted cities, is the low 20s. That's in the U.S. The most polluted cities will have in the low 20s, which is considered bad by U.S. standards. But that fresh air, see, even the poor in America, you know, many of those obese poor who are eating the false economy food, they are at least benefiting from this air pollution exported to China. However, it is starting to plop down on places like California, where all of those, you know, the mercury from the coal plants in China are, you know, floating over the sea and landing in California.
Mm-hmm. I guess, you know, there's going to be a die-off in China. So I wonder how the world will react when 50 million people die suddenly, and there's a colony collapse, 50 million people die, there's an outbreak of some disease related to this pollution, they're dead, they have a mass grave, they bury them in the ground, and I wonder what the world, how it will react. And my guess is that people won't care.
And again, we'll address the shriekers, because the shriekers will say, for example, I'm just making up numbers here, on a $10 barrel of oil or a $100 barrel of oil, which is what the price is now, you can't add $2 to the cost. Here in the UK, the government is taking 50 pounds off of environmental regulations on your energy bill so we can burn more, right? They're saying. Well, here they ask, what is the economic impact of air pollution? And they say it's difficult to know the economic but the benefits of industrialization versus loss of health and productivity are trade-offs not fully understood. But we know from our experience in the U.S. that we get quite substantial benefits when we are able to reduce air pollution. The benefits of clean air are unbelievably high, at least 2 to 3 times the costs associated with reducing pollution. So here we have people think they're going to get a 50-pound reduction in their energy bill. Mm-hmm. But what they're saying is actually it's going to cost you £100 in lost earnings based on the increased pollution.
Mm-hmm. Right. So as we pointed out many times, there's a net loss. But because it requires rubbing two brain cells together, people don't want to think about the net loss. They just want to look at this $50 gain that they're getting. And they translate that immediately into, oh my God, that's 5 pints at the pub. I'm a winner. Yay!
Yeah. Plus, it's also actually this 50-pound thing is the government's still going to spend it. They're just going to take it out of people's paychecks instead. So there's no incentive to reduce your energy use. They're just going to take it from your work. You could have reduced it on your own by putting in insulation or using the heat less or, you know, wearing more sweaters or, you know, there are ways for you to avoid having to, use less energy. So now they're going to remove that. They're just going to instead just charge people who work.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of pints at the pub, pint prices at the pub have gone up. You know, people are complaining. We hear it all the time here in Soho that the price of these pints is going up. Now, one positive effect is that I've noticed less vomit in the streets. So I'm personally quite pleased about this, because I used to see on a Saturday morning, you used to see 10, 20 vomit, you know, expressions of vomit on the streets. And now maybe one of them. And I think that's a direct result of this stealth hyperinflation. So that's a positive.
That's true. Fewer people are drinking at, I don't know how much it costs for a pint, but it's like something like £5 is a ridiculous amount. I remember when I first came here and it was like £2. But they say that a lot more people are instead just going to Asda or Tesco and buying a 6-pack and drinking it at home, mm-hmm, before they go out with their friends.
Yeah, they should just stay at home, close the windows, turn on the gas, and help the economy by committing suicide.
He's joking, of course. He's joking. Okay, well, we dealt with all of that. Now, there has been so much news about Bitcoin over the Thursday and Friday. There was like story after story after story after story coming out, which is why today's episode of Kaiser Report doesn't actually deal anything with Bitcoin, because there was so much coming out, it was hard to process it and still be timely, because it was just lots of stuff. So lots of stuff. On the one hand, we have Merrill Lynch, their top analyst there, one of their top analysts there, says, as we've been saying, he says Bitcoin could replace Western Union and PayPal. But he in particular looks at remittances and says it could displace completely Western Union. And as you said on Newsnight, I'm sure he perhaps watched that and mm-hmm. was sold on your argument. We had Germany say that it is a private currency and they welcomed it. Their actual finance minister or somebody from their Ministry of Finance said that this is like Hayek's theory on competition and currencies, and we welcome it. The press didn't actually pay much attention to that. Only Bloomberg News did. There's an article in Bloomberg about it. But they paid more attention to what's happened in China, and China banned their financial services from accepting Bitcoin. They didn't ban their citizens from using it, but they banned their financial services. I think they're afraid of, you know, they have capital controls, right? You're not allowed to bring a certain amount of yuan out to Hong Kong. People try. They mostly do it through those junkets to Macau. But and they put them into chips, and then they cash out the chips.
That's right. They're chippers.
They're chippers. But they also, the other thing is, oh, Baidu, which is the eBay of China, was accepting Bitcoin for a while, and then they've stopped accepting it last night. And that really, I think the Baidu announcement caused quite a sell-off in Bitcoin, because I guess people panicked about it. But at the same time, yesterday, the CEO of eBay said that they're looking into Bitcoin. So what do you make of all this news?
Well, I think on balance, you know, you saw a pullback in Bitcoin price of 50-60%. Which I think is a positive, because it will discourage the proliferation of the alternative, the altcoins, as they're known. Mm-hmm. There are 50 or 60 altcoins, Litecoin being the most traded. And, you know, people are talking about, we were at an event this week, and like, what if Justin Bieber started a alternative currency? And that's possible. Justin Bieber could start an alternative currency, and because he has so much of a social media presence, it could do very, very well. But these sell-offs, 50-60% sell-offs, discourage the Justin Biebers from getting involved, because they feel it might tarnish their brand. Net-net, interest remains in Bitcoin. So I think it's quite, I think Satoshi anticipated this and anticipated the possibility of a Justin Bieber coin. And we see this volatility is great, because it keeps out these this type of pop icons from getting involved, and it strengthens the Bitcoin.
Well, my theory was like a week or two ago, is that the problem with it being at 1,000 at that point, when it was hitting 1,000, when it was rising so fast, it was also attracting more attention, because from the mainstream media, who were reporting on it heavily. I mean, we've been bombarded with stories from Bloomberg and CNBC and ABC and BBC. Everybody's covering it now because the price is rising. So more and more people were learning about it based on these articles and wanting to get involved. But because the price had risen so fast to 1,000 and then over 1,000, I think it got up to something like 1,200. I'm not sure. But it was people were tending to hoard it then, because they had their Bitcoin and they didn't know if it was going to continue to rise. But I think the fall will probably got a lot of people to disgorge some of their holdings. They were, you know, not, because there are some people with tens of thousands of Bitcoin. We we know some people with hundreds of thousands. So, you know, it's good for them to get rid of some of their Bitcoin and let it circulate and let other people get their hands on some.
Well, it's a healthy ecology. I think the Bitcoin price, by going through swings, is the way an economy and healthy economy or a healthy ecology looks. People are used to an unhealthy ecology or an unhealthy economy where prices only go up, money is always for free, and there's never any ecological consequences if you are part of the folks that are getting money for free. That's not a healthy economy or a healthy ecology, and it leads toward colony collapse and extinction. Bitcoin is showing what used to be considered to be a normal economy, a normal ecology. Things fluctuate, and there's a lot of give and take, and there's a certain Darwinian forces at work, and that's the way it looks like. People just have forgotten what reality looks like. They're shocked when reality hits them in the face. This is what reality looks like.
So when it, you know, the Baidu story, a lot of the value, how you would describe the market capitalization of Bitcoin is its use in as a payment system. And I guess that did shut off quite a big market of their eBay of China. However, the likes of BitPay are continuing to add many new merchants. And there is also this new company, also, you know, a guy who's involved with all those same people out of New York is ZipZap, which is opening up 28,000 merchant points here across the UK from, you know, they're rolling out, I think, in January. So there's an ever increasing number of people who are, you know, merchants accepting Bitcoin, including, of course, Sir Richard Branson.
Mm-hmm. That's right. The proliferation of people using Bitcoin is really the key number, not the market capitalization. And the fact that you've now got this deal coming with 28,000 outlets, retail outlets, offering Bitcoin for dollars or pounds is also extremely important. There's, you know, a lot of things in the pipeline, I would say, for Bitcoin that are very positive. And so, I mean, if you're a veteran of Bitcoin traders going back 4 years, there have been a number of occasions when the price has dropped up to 90%. It didn't really, in the long run, mean anything.
Well, yeah. Well, I was going through that last night on Twitter. Like, there used to be a concept of being zootonged, and that was Bitcoinica, where back in the day you could leverage up. People were actually leveraged like 5 to 1 there. You could borrow basically and leverage up, and people were just getting wiped out. That was a Chinese programmer had designed that site, and then everybody got wiped out, and he left, and they all shut down. But also, somebody in our comment section left a note about BTC China. So they were more like the old school original days, where it was very easy to secure, buy Bitcoin on exchanges, because you didn't need to, you just sent them money and you didn't need to send any ID or any sort of, you know, statements or bills proving that who you are or where you live. But now BTC China, apparently from yesterday, started asking for that from people who have accounts there. So, I mean, I remember when Mt. Gox, I had an account there where they didn't require any identification back in the day. But now all of these, you know, the know your customer thing. This was a big topic of discussion, actually, back at the London Bitcoin Expo last weekend. You know, if you're interested in Bitcoin, and some of you may not be, and so you don't have to go any further from there, but some of you may be more curious. There are so many Bitcoin conferences now. You know, 3 years ago when Max and I were first going to these, there was only a few, and most of the crowd of like 20 or 30 people back in those days were like hardcore programmers who had never seen the light of day in a few years. And now it's like all sorts of young people, middle-aged people, business owners, entrepreneurs. But the discussions are really quite interesting, and you learn a lot about all the issues, know your customer stuff, money laundering stuff, tax stuff. Like, there are all sorts of discussions on these, and they hold them all the time. So, you know, I guess we could post some at maxkaiser.com, but, you know, just Google it and look for your area, because they're really quite fascinating to go to. There are interesting discussions that I think could benefit everybody.
Yes, I agree with that. I'm very interested in how the Pirate Bay and the whole file swapping industry, which went to war with the record industry and the movie industry, is getting its life extended thanks to Bitcoin. And now on the other side of this war is the recording industry, the movie industry, and the banking industry. So this division, this war between freedom fighters who support the Pirate Party, and they support the Pirate Bay, and they support Bitcoin, versus the cartels and the money hacks. So that's happening on a global basis, and there will be countries like Cyprus who decide they want to go all in with Bitcoin, and they could become a huge Bitcoin hub. And there are countries that want to align themselves with the bad guys, whether it's Hollywood or Federal Reserve Bank, and those people are the big losers. You know, I've been fighting this war now for, you know, almost 20 years. I've been fighting this war against the copyright cartel and the banksters. And we've had some losses along the way, the most visible being Aaron Schwartz, who was hounded to death by the MPAA. So we've had some real losses, but I think that we're going to win in the end.
Yeah, that's true. Just Google Max Kaiser, I think Lizard King Vegas Expo or some sort of expo in 1999, a price point called zero. You got into a public bout with the vice president of Warner Brothers, I think it was.
Yeah. Well, now that price point towards zero concept has been applied to money transfer. And that's why Western Union is now threatened. That's what I said on Newsnight the other day, is that the local money transfer companies are threatened by the frictionless, costless money transfer of Bitcoin. So it's a remarkable phenomenon that could benefit humanity in a huge way. However, unfortunately, the gulag owners and kleptocrats are not going quietly into that good night.
They will. They will. They will. Mm-hmm. So let's move on to another topic. I'm going to look at The Guardian and see what's happening here. I saw that, well, obviously we know Nelson Mandela died. That was not unexpected. He had been quite ill for the past year. China pulls out of UN process. I didn't know that. This is Joe Biden continues to deal with fallout as move underscores China's tough geopolitical stance. There's the territorial dispute happening, and Joe Biden is there on the U.S. China's taking the highly unusual step of refusing to participate in a United Nations arbitration process over a territorial conflict with the Philippines, one of the five countries challenging Beijing's claim of ownership over the oil-rich South China Sea. Right. Everything is coming down to the last remains of oil on the earth, and the South China Sea is one of them, and the Arctic is another. And then, of course, you have the area around the Falklands, which I don't know. I think that area is even more dangerous than the Arctic. I don't know, down near Antarctica. But, you know, the UK thinks one day they're going to tap into some oil reserves down there. But the legal dispute underscores the tough geopolitical approach China is adopting in the Pacific region. It has adopted an aggressive approach toward neighbors over a 2,000-mile stretch that also includes the East China Sea, over which it recently declared the air defense identification zone that has inflamed tensions with Japan and South Korea. Now, there was also some statement this week from Putin regarding the Arctic. Let me see. And he specifically mentioned the U.S. Cold, cold war. Putin talks tough over U.S. Arctic rivalry. Putin says Russia needs beefed up Arctic presence. Russia has vital economic and defense interests in the Arctic, Putin says. So these are the, you know, if you look at the global map right now for U.S. military bases, you'll see it's surrounding the Middle East. Now, you could either think, if you want, if you choose to, that these people are just naturally evil, spontaneously evil, and America is just a benevolent, saintly sort of country going to protect innocent bystanders from these spontaneously evil people with no source of their supposed evil. Or you can look at the natural resources of those countries and wonder if it might not be about that. So here are the emerging conflict. We might have spontaneously evil Eskimos up there soon. Who knows? But Russian President Vladimir Putin said this week that U.S. military capabilities in the Arctic Circle leaves his government little choice but to maintain a strong foothold in the frigid north, where tensions between the former Cold War adversaries in recent years have heated up as the polar ice thawed. Of course, a lot of shriekers will say, no, it's growing. The ice is growing. We're in a new ice age. But the fact that all sorts of ships are going through there, they're left behind, the truly left behind people who can't, who have to come up with all sorts of fairy tales to explain away facts on the ground. They're like George Osborne on crack.
I don't know why the shriekers are doing the work of big oil. I don't get it. I mean, because a lot of them are anti-genetically modified organisms, GMO foods. They're not doing the work of Monsanto. A lot of them are not doing the work of other corporate players, but for some reason they all fall for the same scam, and they're doing the hard work of promoting a scam of and they work for the oil companies. I don't know why that is. I guess they just, I don't know.
So Putin's comments follow on the recent renewal of U.S. attention to the Arctic. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel laid out the Pentagon's revised Arctic strategy at the Halifax International Security Forum in Nova Scotia last month. The U.S. policy blueprint calls for, quote, building trust through transparency about the intent of our military activities and participation in bilateral and multilateral exercises and other engagements that facilitate information sharing. You see that sort of PR speak for, like, we're becoming militarized and aggressive and we want that oil, damn it, and we're going to take it?
It's unfortunate because all those trends are just accelerating in terms of warming and the rise in the ocean sea levels, which of course bring in these mega storms. In the last 2 years, we've seen an increase in the mega storms. And yeah, like I said, I think we're the last of a breed. You know, we're heading to a post-Homo sapien world of cyborg and cave dwellers and bunker busters and basically people with nothing to lose except their it's just one big where's God in all this? Where's God?
It's funny, this is an article from ABC News, so they have to listen to how they have to couch this their words, how you have to self-censor for your population who are shriekers. With many experts saying that global warming is expediting the melting of the Arctic ice caps. So they're saying it's like doubtful whether this is happening, right? With experts are saying this. We don't know if it's happening. But then, comma, newly created water routes have opened up. Mysteriously, God works in mysterious ways. Is spontaneous evil in the Middle East? Is spontaneous water routes in the Arctic?
Yeah.
Everything's spontaneous without any cause or effect.
That's right. It's we live in a spontaneous, you know, whatever happened to people spontaneously combusting? Was that ever true, or was that a big urban myth?
I don't know. It was probably an urban myth. I think that was happening in the days before Snopes.com. But so they say these newly created water routes have opened up a possible treasure trove of commercial wealth to northern nations in the form of oil, mineral, and natural gases. There has been competition among countries for Arctic uses rights since the 1950s, but the accelerated melting of Arctic glaciers in recent years has resulted in the resurgence of a Cold War-like scramble reminiscent of the United States-Russia moon landing rivalry. You know, 1984, there's like spontaneous eruptions of wars that we've always been at there because we're not allowed to know the cause. Mm-hmm. It'll be like, oh, there's spontaneously a war going on up there in the Arctic, and which is the biggest glaciers we've ever seen in the history of humanity. It's like a new ice age up there that we could sail right through. And God has spontaneously opened up some water routes for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the ice pack is increasing. In a way that's so massive, you can't see it. Everything becomes like a Jackie Mason routine in the end. I think that's why he's still alive, even though he's like 200 years old. Everything is completely gone Jackie Mason. And the ice, the ice is going. And the water levels are going to rise. And there's going to be a lot of superstorms. And, you know, kiss your children goodbye because it's all over.
Well, so, you know, you heard it here first. It's going to be a spontaneous eruption of spontaneous evil people when it does hit the mainstream media and they're talking about it on the evening news. They'll say it was spontaneously evil Eskimos. Suddenly, you know, who've taken into worshiping icebergs or something, they'll say. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we'll talk about their misinterpretation of Adam Smith's chapter on icebergs, and it'll be something like that will say was the cause. But so let's look at what's happening by the way up in the snooker championships. I know that our friend Ronnie O'Sullivan, a fan of the show, he listens to the show here on Residence 104.4 FM. What is going on with up in York at the Barbican? There's the UK snooker championship. Is Ronnie placing in there or what?
Well, I just seen this tweet from Monique, at Monique Limbos, who says that on the hashtag snooker, the Barbican crowd and players pay tribute to Nelson Mandela before the start of play. That's the news from the snooker championship. I haven't seen anything else.
Oh, no, I see that Ronnie is out. He, UK Championship, Ronnie O'Sullivan loses to Stuart Bingham. He's eliminated from the UK Championship after a 6-4 quarterfinal defeat to Stuart Bingham. So he's out. Therefore, we don't care about the snooker championship today. The results, the final showdown.
That's not right. Ronnie never loses. So that's wrong. And just like there's no, the ice is increasing in the Arctic, Ronnie won the championship because Ronnie never loses, and that's the way it is.
I love the phraseology and the words used in snooker. So here it goes. Reigning world champion Ronnie O'Sullivan has been knocked out of the UK championship after a 6-4 quarterfinal defeat to Stuart Bingham. Bingham led 3-1 at the mid-session interval before O'Sullivan hit back with two brilliant centuries.
Yeah, he hit the centuries, that's right. But, well, you know, Ronnie is a genius, snooker genius, and we're going to see the tournament this year up at the Octagon in Sheffield. I look forward to seeing everybody there. I'll be signing snooker balls for no apparent reason. And...
Does anybody know this, that you'll be signing snooker balls?
Yeah, I'm making that announcement just now. We're going to be signing snooker balls and up at the Octagon for this year's World Championship. And I'm on alternate in case one of the Asian fellas drop out due to air pollution. I'm going to step in. It could be me and Ronnie in the championship final match.
Yeah, Ronnie was very concerned about you Brits, by the way, that you're not taking up snooker. That it looks like he said China will rule the world in snooker. They have like 30,000, 40,000, 50,000.
60 million. 60 million registered snooker players in China. It's almost the entire population of Britain. So it stands to reason that within a few years, the snooker will be completely dominated by Chinese.
Oh,
You
poor
see,
Ronnie.
now, of all the things we've been talking about in the last hour on this show about ice caps melting, the ocean's level rising, colony collapse, extinction, the bubonic plague, only what I just said has caught the attention of any British person listening to this show. The fact that snooker could be very soon taken over by Chinese. That is serious. Everything else we just said leading up to this has been considered not very serious.
Well, that's true. I'm surprised at the number of people who don't know anything about snooker. We seem to know more than some, certainly the lovey sort, like the British loveys in the media industry don't seem to know much about snooker.
Well, it stands to reason because they're, toffee-nosed little wankers, aren't they? I mean, the people know anything about snooker. It's the people's game.
Well, with that, we're going to start wrapping up here. And, on today's episode of the Kaiser Report, Max takes off his shirt in imitating David Cameron. And I have heard via Twitter, somebody tweeted me to say that it was censored here in the UK. They put on like a, they blurred it to show. Because apparently your six pack was just driving the women crazy.
That's what happens. I'm not surprised.
Well, if you want to see Max Kaiser imitate your dear prime minister here, and he actually starts off with a little bit of an imitation of your porcine, how is it pronounced? Porcine or porcine? Porky, Chancellor of the Exchequer, George Osborne.
All right, then. I guess we're saying goodbye now. Bye, y'all.